listener-supported KTOO. Welcome to Juno Afternoon. It's Friday, October 6th, 2023. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Gunath Chish, Hawa, Salamat for joining the conversation. On today's show, it's the launch of Maga Cuento, a podcast, a museum exhibit, and community celebration with partners including KTOO News, Juneau Douglas City Museum, Filipino Community Inc., and Theater Alaska, who will be presenting a neighborhood cabaret tomorrow at the community celebration and are here today with a preview. We will also hear the first episode of the podcast, which drops today. And the Mike Block Trio previews their closing concert for the Juno Jazz and Classics Fall Music Festival with some music here live in the studio. Those conversations, music, and more coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon.
Support from Hanson Gress. Seeking curious people who like technology, network engineering, and customer support. Opportunities for those who thrive on problem solving. Details at hansengress.com/careers.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
For over a century, Filipinos have shaped the community of Juno. But how did we get here? And why do we stay?
I'm just here to try and make sure that this organization, that effort that people put into making this community vibrant and what it is today, doesn't falter.
Listen to KTOO's new podcast for stories from Juno's Filipino community. Maga Cuento premieres October 6th. Find it at ktoo.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sobrang init, alam mo magaling. Sobrang init, alam mo ang dating. Sobrang gigil, para na akong pating. I'm so amazing, akala nila baliw. Sobrang init, alam mo magaling. Sobrang init, alam mo ang dating. Sobrang gigil, para na akong pating. I'm so amazing, akala nila baliw. Sino si Migo?
Migo?
Filipino representing the Kalibo.
Kalibo?
Sobrang haba ng biyahe, ako'y nahilo.
Hilo.
Pero okay lang kasi ako ay bibo. Angas ng beat kasi ako'y nasa tempo. Di mapagkakait, meron pa rin talento. Luluto ang kaano, gusto adobo. Kaya mag-rap, kumanta at magluto. Yeah. Now you know na wordplay.
Wordplay, cold chain with the sing sing. Bling bling, flex and homie, we are doing king things. Ring ring, hitting up the thick things. They be pulling up to the door like bling bling. I be snapping, yo, I'm Kobe when I ball. Sunning your whole team, call that Chris Paul. Nikes and Jordans, homie, I'm buying it all. My credit card unlimited like Mang Inasal. Oh, Kim's, tell him
Mang Inasal, yeah, that's the best. Parang all Kim's wordplay and the rest of the homies kasama TDE. Baka makuha rin kami sa show ni Andrew E. You feeling me? Pare, ito ang vibe. Saw you dance, yeah, the track is fire. Ati ati and vibe without drums and lyre. To all my Filipino people wanna say hi.
Girl, I'm too fly. Get it from the back like my shoe size. Smooth guy, holla at your girl like my buhay. Tonight, too nice, mess it with a
cool ride.
Cool ride, like homie, she's been on it like a few times. That's how I roll. Flexing my checklist, man, my ego wants hold. Affectionately, your girl obsessed with me. I'm like a piece of balut, babe, I'm a delicacy. Now go tell him.
Sobrang init, alam mo magaling. Sobrang init, alam mo ang dating. Sobrang init, para na akong pating. And so amazing, akala nila baliw. Sobrang init, alam mo magaling. Sobrang init, alam mo ang dating. Sobrang gigit, para na akong pating. And so amazing, akala nila baliw. Boy, yeah.
What? Play?
Oh, Kim's. Yeah.
DDE, DDE.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I have a seat right here. That's awesome. That was so cool.
Thank you so much.
I mean, that was sounding like it was, you know, on vinyl or something, but that was not on vinyl. That was live here in Studio 2K at KTOO. You're listening to Community Supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at KTOO.org. I'm Boston Christopher. After almost a year of research, planning, and organization, today marks the launch of MAGA Cuento, which means the stories in Tagalog. It's a museum exhibit, a podcast, and a community celebration honoring and examining the Filipino people and the history and ongoing contributions to the community of Juneau. Partners involved include the KTO News Team, the Juneau Douglas City Museum, and Filipino Community Inc., where tomorrow, Saturday, October 7th, from noon to 5 at Philcom Hall, a community celebration will take place, where additional partner, Theater Alaska, will present a neighborhood cabaret at 2 p.m. and 4 p.m. Artistic Director for Theater Alaska, Floridolino Lagandino, is here, as well as the two folks you just heard on the mic. That's Miko Montoya and Wordplay, and they're here to give us a little bit of lowdown on what's happening tomorrow. They just gave us a preview of something that's going to be happening. So, salamat for coming into the studio today. Y'all, how you doing?
Good, thanks, man.
Yeah, thank you so much. So, let's start with you, Floridolino. How did this partnership come about with Theater Alaska doing a neighborhood cabaret at the community celebration event at Philcom Hall?
Yeah, I mean, we've kind of been talking to Tasha Lazardi, who's been working on organizing all this for a couple of years now, a year, year and a half, about the things to do to collaborate together. And then we at, I've been working with the Filipino Community Hall for quite some time previous to this event. When I lived here before with Generator Theater Company, we presented a play called Flipsoids that was presented in collaboration with the Filipino Community Inc. So yeah, so it's like really just love being a part of the hall. And I remember when we did the long season a long time ago, we went there and did a couple events there too. So just always trying to find things to do with
partner on.
I remember
Flipsoids. That was a few years ago now, but I do remember that production. That was pretty cool. Yeah. Okay. And so this project is a sort of large scale with three major components that we've been highlighting all week. We had an interview with Tasha. We talked to the museum about the exhibit. What does it mean to have this project premiering specifically also during this month, Filipino American History Month? What does it mean to y'all?
I mean, yeah, it's crazy. It's pretty dope that we're having like a Filipino celebration. I've never really like been to one. So like, yeah, it's kind of cool that we're all getting together and doing something like cool for the community like that.
Yeah, it's really cool. It sort of started with the interview I did with Tosh on Tuesday show. If anybody wants to go back and listen, I started with like this little seed of an idea that she was working on, and it just sort of
kept
exploding into all these different features and elements and all that kind of stuff. So that's kind of cool. So really appreciate Wordplay and Miko for coming in and setting down some rhymes for us today. I really appreciated that. How long have y'all been doing music? And it looks like you've been doing music together a little bit.
To be honest, it's only been a year.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I mean, I've been making music since I was a kid, but like we really started taking it seriously for, since last year.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. We're part of a label called Diamond Dollar Entertainment, independent. And yeah, Miko's been with me for a few months now.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And, we've been working for months now since I just got here last year, September. But I've been doing music back home.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So like 5 years.
What brought you to Juno?
I just got married.
Oh, you got married? Yeah. Well, that's awesome. Yeah. Congratulations.
It's actually going to be our anniversary on the 11th.
Hey. Oh. Yeah.
It's actually my birthday, too. So it's going to be special.
You got married on your birthday?
Yeah.
Whoa. Something to remember. Double celebration. I love that.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Floridolino, in addition to what we just heard, what other kinds of songs or music can we expect to hear tomorrow?
Yeah, I can hear, obviously, rap. I can also hear violin music, Isabel Wilson's going to play the violin. Salisa Thole and Kainoa Thole are going to be playing. Salisa is a singer in town. Mark Rosales is the singer in town. And then Brian Bolaños is a guitarist. So then Herbie Carparas is another singer. So a lot of just a different singing, violin playing, just a lot of different music, kind of just sharing the variety of talents exactly that are here in town. And it's interesting, like, you know, I was like, okay, Tasha reached out to me and we were like, hey, let's do this neighborhood cabaret thing. It's like, let's find some people. And I was like, oh my gosh, so great to see that, you know, Wordplay is rapping and, you know, and Miko is singing. It's like, so great to see people that I've never didn't know anything about them before this is happening. And I think it's part of the joy about doing this.
And coming together and making it all happen and the celebration of it all. That's really cool. Now you have two shows tomorrow, one at 2 and 1 at 4. The whole celebration takes place at Philcom Hall from noon to 5. Mm-hmm. Are the shows at 2 and 4 different or the same? Do we need to plan to be there for the whole time or can we come to one of the shows?
You can come to one of those. The people are going to be, I think the sets are going to be a little bit different for each time. But, you know, if you only had time for one, that's totally cool. And I want to say that Rob Cohen is also playing for a bunch of us as well. So
yeah, and the whole celebration tomorrow, it includes an installation surveying almost 100 years of history, from portraits of elders to costumes. We were setting it up the other day. It looks really cool. There's some great costumes from the Filipino community's Ali Tap Tap dance group, which people would remember from like the 4th of July parades, all that kind of stuff. There's going to be workshops, martial arts and dance, workshops, food, incorporating, of course, Filipino flavors from local chefs and caterers, and of course, the music that you all will be performing tomorrow.
And actually, Miko is going to be doing a drumming workshop tomorrow as well in the afternoon.
And what time is that?
I think it's at noon.
Okay.
At 12. Yeah.
Because you like, you know, all the drumming that happens at the parade, he's going to like be helping with that and like talking about it.
That's so cool. Yeah. That is so cool. Well, it's an awesome celebration. It's tomorrow, October 7th at Filipino Community Hall. It's from noon to 5, and the Neighborhood Cabaret being put on by Theater Alaska at 2 o'clock and 4 o'clock. Gunath Chi, Shlamat for our guests for joining me today giving us this little preview. It's a tease. We got to show up tomorrow and sort of really get some food in our bellies, take some workshops, and jam to some cool, cool music. So for more on Theater Alaska, visit Theater Alaska. That's theater with an E-R, theateralaska.org. Or for more on the Filipino Community Hall celebration, visit the Filipino Community Inc. page on Facebook, or you can go to kto.org. And so, word player Miko, do you want to drop a website for where you guys can find music and stuff?
You can find me everywhere at Wordplay, the Flyest MC, Spotify, YouTube. Miko's on my channel too, if you want to check out him. And follow me on Instagram at Wordplay, the Flyest MC.
Yeah, we're all there.
We're all there.
I love it. Awesome. Well, salamat for coming in. Thanks
so
much.
Thank you. Salamat.
Thanks, salamat.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Up next, we'll hear the first episode of the Maga Cuento podcast. This is Juno Afternoon from KTOO. La chara chara, la chara chara, la chara chara chara, la chara la chara. Mama, kamusta na di na? Tayo laging nagkikita, miss na kita sobra. Lagi na lang kami ang nauuna. Di ba pwedeng ikaw muna? Akin ang pangamba. Dahil ikaw ang aking mata, sa tuwing mundo'y nag-iibang dahilan na aking paghinga. Kaya huwag mag-alala, ipikitan yung mata, tanga, pahinga muna. That is the boy band SB19 from the Philippines. Little more flavor for the mood of Maga Cuento that we want to get into. We are going to be, you're listening to Juno Afternoon from listener-supported public media station KTOO. We're broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. We've been talking all week about the Maga Cuento project, and today is the launch. Tonight, the City Museum launches with a first Friday opening from 4 to 7 p.m. with a show called Maga Cuento, Filipinos in Juno. And tomorrow, we were just talking about it, the community celebration takes place at Philcom Hall from 12 to 5. And available now, dropped today from the KTO News team, it's the first episode of the podcast Maga Cuento. And you can get that wherever you get your podcasts. Note, it might be a day or so before it appears on Apple Podcasts, just to note that. But it is already up on Spotify and pretty much anywhere else you might get that. So here is that first episode of Maga Cuento titled How Filipino Migration Shaped Juno and My Family. It comes from executive producer Tasha Elizarde.
It's my grandmother's 83rd birthday. We're gathered in my relative's home, crowded around a dining table filled with rice and adobo. As my uncle plays a familiar melody on the guitar, someone brings out a cake. Together, my family sings and laughs, watching my grandmother dance to the beat of our claps. This is how I grew up, listening to my mom greet friends in Tagalog, practicing tinikling at community gatherings, walking the streets of downtown, where I'd find a food stand serving lumpia or barbecue. And although it might sound like it, I'm not in the Philippines. I'm almost 6,000 miles away, in a community called Juneau, Alaska. My name is Tasha Elizarde, and you're listening to Maga Cuento, a podcast about the diverse stories of Juno's Filipino community. A century before I was born, my hometown started growing into a thriving metropolis for migrants coming from all over the Philippine Islands. Now, I am just one of thousands of Filipinos living in Juno. So how did I, and so many other Filipinos, end up building a home in our corner of Alaska?
One of the stories I tell often is how Dad shared as a young man working in the rice fields and rice paddies in his village. And he described it as back-breaking work, bent over and pulling up the shoots of rice and the like and shaking them. And he talked about water buffalo, and he talked about grass huts, and he talked about snakes.
That's Barbara Cadiente Nelson. And like me, Barbara was born and raised in Juneau. Her father, Andres Aquino Cadiente, belonged to the large wave of Filipino laborers who migrated to work in Alaska's canneries in the early 1900s. They're known as the Alaskeros.
He didn't want to have a family that had to work so hard to bring their dreams to fruition, that he wanted his family to have opportunities, and he didn't want this for his children. And so when he had an opportunity to leave the country, he left his parents and his siblings and the home that he knew for a better tomorrow to create that.
You can't really sum up a rich life in a short amount of time.
And that's Barbara's sister, Rinalda Cadiente Brown.
Our father lived until the age 98 and was part of the fabric of Juno. And through him and our mother, we were part of the Filipino community, part of the native community.
As she describes, their father had another reason for leaving his home of Ilocos Sur.
One of the reasons he decided to leave the Philippines was his grandfather decided that he would be a shaman, medicine, and he didn't want that. He decided that his path would be his own choosing and not be chosen for him.
When Andres left Ilocos Sur, he was part of a large wave of single Filipino men who migrated to the U.S. in search of a different life. At this point, Filipinos had successfully resisted three centuries of Spanish colonization.
only for the U.S. to interfere with their fight for sovereignty in the Philippine-American War. In 1900, a colonial government controlled by the U.S. and Philippine elites was formed, and American industries jumped at the opportunity to recruit and exploit Filipinos for their labor. By the time that Andreas came to the U.S., a vibrant Filipino community was establishing itself in the country.
His older brother was already in the United States in California. He came across on a Canadian frigate, and that passageway brought him to Hawaii, and he found that the only jobs realistically that they would be able to find would be working in the fields, and he didn't want that. Then he made his way down to his brother and discovered the same thing, that it would be working in the fields more than likely. And that's where he chose the cooking profession, that would save him from the backbreaking labor, and applied his work that way.
Andreas didn't stay in California, though. In the 1940s, he left for a job in Alaska. It's in Juneau where Andreas met his wife, Irene. The pair met while he was a chef at the restaurant that she waitressed at, and together, the two got involved in the community, running a few of their own restaurants on South Franklin. Being a young Filipino Clinguet family in the 50s and 60s, though, Juneau wasn't always welcoming to the Calientes. This was a time when some people put up signs reading "No dogs, no Indians allowed." When they were kids, bullies would follow Barbara and her sisters.
There I was at probably 9, 10 years old. We had rocks and dirt in our hair and grass from the dirt bombs that, grass bombs that they would throw at us. They called us names and lay in wait for us to walk up the hill to our home.
And when those in the Juneau community went out of their way to exclude the Caliente family, their father affirmed that they belonged.
Our dad said to us, "Yeah, stop crying. Look outside your window. You see those posts, the four posts, front and back," and he pointed them out. They were the stakes to our home, the land markings. "This is your home. You belong here. You belong here. You have every right to be here. This is your home."
Why did he want to be in Juneau? What was his reason for staying here?
I think he embraced it fully as home. In all of the time in his long life, he only returned to the Philippines one time. He was there for a month when I was a teenager. And when he returned home, it was so wonderful to have him back home, and how beautiful toasty brown he was from the tropical sun. But I remember him proclaiming that, "I've been there. This is home."
That sentiment, as well as both their parents' desire to create a better community, followed Barbara and Rinalda. The two of them still live in Juneau, and through decades of service, they have both become leaders in Alaska's anti-racism movement.
So can you tell the story about the first time that I learned that our relative is in this book?
Yeah, where did we saw this one? We saw it in the Philcom? Is it Philcom?
Who's the museum?
Oh, museum, sorry.
Wait, yeah. Read the book. Read the title of the book.
The title of the book is Filipinos in Alaska, 1788 through 1958. Wow. Research and written by Thelma Bucholt.
That's my mom, Agnes Elizarde. A few years ago, I picked up this book, the only book ever published dedicated to telling the history of Filipinos in Alaska, while researching Filipino history for the Alaska State Museum.
So, yeah, I think I found when I was flipping things somewhere here. Somewhere.
I showed the book to my mom, who, to my surprise, pointed out an unfamiliar name, Frank Bilardi.
Oh, right here. Filipinos who work at AJ Mine during 1930s include Bilardi, Elijah. But the other one, in 1930s, there's also Frank Bilardi here. Front row.
Frank Velarde is my lolo, or grandfather, on my dad's side. He's an Alaskero, one of the Filipinos who worked at the Alaska Juneau mine in the 1930s. And he was an American citizen when he came to the Philippines and married my dad's aunt, my Lola Sally. He is the reason why my family is in Juneau instead of in the Philippines. He's also a bit of a family mystery.
Asaka masawi di mo ba daramdamin ito.
Remember the birthday girl? That's Feli Elizarde, my grandmother on my dad's side. Or, as my family likes to call her, Nanay. Here, she's singing one of her favorite karaoke songs from back in the Philippines. Nanay migrated to Alaska in 1983, about 40 years after Andres Aquino Gadiente came to Juneau, and long after my Lolo Frank passed away.
Do you remember much about Frank Velarde?
Frank Velarde?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about him, but... Because I met him only one time when they came in the Philippines. Brother, I said, can you please help me? I said, if you will arrive in Juneau, can you tell my sister to make a petition of his brother, my husband, so that my husband can come there in Alaska, and then so that we can have some money to spend for the kids for going to college. I said, oh yeah, don't worry, Feli, he said.
At first, Mananay and her husband, my Lolo Hermie, were excited to go to the U.S. They heard that they could make higher wages for their children, and they wanted to see what the country was like. But the visa approval process takes time. And the more time passed, the more my grandparents' circumstances changed. During this time, Nanay's kids grew up, and the entire family moved from provincial San Juan to urban Cavite. Her eldest kids had started college there, and Nanay was running a shop with her aunties. The family had completely settled into their new home in Cavite. So, once they got their visas, my Nanay wasn't sure she wanted to go.
I do not feel happy because I'm... I don't know what will be happen to be here.
But when a visa is approved, you have to act fast. It was their eldest son who convinced them that they should go.
Wow, your Uncle Henry before is very happy. No, when he is coming near our house in Cavite, wow, he is having the pepper and running. Wow, we are very lucky. We win a sweepstakes. He said like that.
My Uncle Henry advised my grandparents to go to Alaska so they could petition for all their kids to migrate there too. Immigration laws at the time only allowed Nanay, Lolo, and their three kids under 19 to go to the U.S. My Nanay, though, is honest about life in Juneau.
I feel not very happy also because here is the only the place that I work too hard. I work too hard.
Nanay spent long hours working as a maid to pay for their home in Juneau and to support her eldest kids still living in the Philippines. She and my Lolo missed her children that were still in the Philippines and the community of friends and families that they had built back in Cavite.
Your Lolo, I tell you, since we arrived here and then since until he died, he never feel any happiness. That's what he told me.
Nanay says she gave my Lolo her permission to return to the Philippines if he wanted to, but she wouldn't follow him.
That's why I like to stay here before in Juneau, because all of them, my children, is here already, and then I'm very happy.
After hearing from the Cadientes and from my Nanay, I couldn't help but wonder, what about Filipinos coming to Juneau now? Why do they come to Alaska? And why do they choose to stay?
I think for obvious reason, better opportunities and employment. And in Juneau, I've noticed that Filipinos are moving to Alaska to be with their families. And it is a lot easier to start a new life in a new place when you have full support of your family.
Nelson San Juan, the Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Labor and Workforce Development, has worked for the state of Alaska since the late 90s after migrating from the province of Batangas. Before he was appointed, he was the principal liaison between the Department of Labor and one of Alaska's largest employers of people coming from the Philippines, Alaska's seafood industry.
I was the one in charge of seafood employment for over 25 years, you know, helping people get a job in the seafood industry. And you can really save money because first, they're providing room and board and transportation in most cases. And then, of course, Alaska state law, after 8 hours of working, it's a time and a half. So I think because of that, Filipinos are moving to Alaska to work in a cannery or to work on a boat or seafood industry.
As deputy commissioner, Nelson talks to and supports Filipino migrants across industries as they adjust to different communities around Alaska. And he's noticed some changes in why they migrate.
Because a lot of Filipinos, most of them, they have experience or have advanced degrees in fields of study that are in high demands, such as, you know, nursing, IT or information system management. Now education, teachers, you know, they're getting popular now in the state of Alaska. We've been hiring a lot of Filipino teachers from the Philippines, and also HR, public administration. That's why there's a lot of Filipinos in the state government and federal government.
There are other pros to Juno, some that are personal to Nelson.
Juno is very important to me. First, my wife is from Juno and her family. And second, I've seen, I like Juno because, my goodness, they embrace our all the Filipinos over there. They realize the impact made by Filipinos in Juno is something. And it was finally recognized by the state, you know. You know, in Alaska's capital downtown in Juno, there is a place called Manila Square. And there's a Filipino community building right there in the heart of downtown of Juno. That's awesome. That makes me so proud.
As for Nelson and his family, they don't live in Juno, but they are one of thousands more Filipinos living in Alaska. And for him, Alaska is truly his home.
Up to this day, every time I drive to Kenai or to anywhere like in Tarkina, I was like in heaven. This is paradise. You know, just everything that happened to me, my personal life, I owe it to the state. And we've been blessed in Alaska.
For over a century, Filipinos have come to Juno for many different reasons. From Andreas Cariente, who aspired for something more in his life and for his family, to my grandparents, who acted on an opportunity that they thought would never happen, to Filipinos now, who moved to Alaska for their families or to grow their careers. And while every person experiences the highs and lows of living in a new place, ultimately, Juno becomes our home. In our next episode of Manga Cuento, Katie Anastas looks more deeply into one of the biggest reasons Filipinos migrate to Alaska, work. We look at a few industries that rely on Filipino workers, including the Alaska Marine Highway System.
And she works nights for the purpose that she could take care of my kids during the daytime. And that's the life of being Filipino here. You work hard and you get used to it.
Manga Cuento is brought to you by KTOO Public Media. This episode was written by Tasha Elizarde, edited by Shane Nuesca, and produced by Dave Waldron. This episode also contains an interview completed by Mana Alaska. Salama and Gunas Chish, Filipino Community Incorporated, for your knowledge, music, and audio included in this series. To Z Squared Studio for creating a beautiful logo for the Manga Cuento project. And to Mana Alaska for sharing your research around Filipino elders in Juno. And of course, Salama and Gunas Chish, Barbara and Ronaldo Cadiente, Agnes and Feli Elizarde, and Nelson San Juan for sharing your stories for this episode of Manga Cuento. You can learn more about Juno's Filipino community by visiting ktoo.org/Filipinos in Alaska. Funding for Manga Cuento comes in part from the City and Borough of Juno and the Juno Arts and Humanities Council, Juno Douglas City Museum's 2023 Juno History Grant,
with funding from the Friends of the Juneau Douglas City Museum and the Juneau Community Foundation, grant and aid from the Alaska State Museum, National Trust for Historic Preservation's Telling the Full History Preservation Fund, with support from the National Endowment for the Humanities, and KTOO supporters like you. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in this podcast do not necessarily represent those of the National Historic Trust, the National Endowment for the Humanities, or any other entity that has contributed to the financing of this project.
And that was it, the first episode of the Maga Cuento podcast. For more, you can subscribe to Maga Cuento in your podcast app of choice or visit ktoo.org. And reminder that the City Museum First Friday exhibit, Maga Cuento, Filipinos in Juneau, begins at 4 p.m. today, and the community celebration at Philcom Hall is tomorrow from 12 to 5 p.m. You can visit juneau.org/museum for more information on the exhibit or Filipino Community Inc. page on Facebook for the community event tomorrow. Up next, the Juneau Jazz and Classics Fall Music Festival closes out tomorrow with the Mike Block Trio. They're in the studio here on Juneau Afternoon from KTOO. We'll be right back. KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Akwan. The Glenné D have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot, once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages, and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations. Thank you. Yeah. Awesome. That's the Mike Block Trio. Have a seat at the microphones, fellas. How are you today? That is so wonderful. What was that piece called, Mike?
Hey there, Boston. We're happy to be here. That was Coromanti Number One, which is a 400-year-old banjo tune, first written down in Jamaica.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. That's pretty cool. All right. So you are listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. All weeks, folks have been getting their jazz and classics on during the Fall Music Festival from Juno Jazz and Classics. Tonight is the Putting on the Rich show featuring Chelsea Green and the Green Project and Zool Bailey. And I hear there might be some surprise guests who might also be in this room. And tomorrow, the festival closes out with the Mike Block Trio. And they are joining me now. The trio fertilizes American roots music with contemporary and international influences, bringing an exciting and personal perspective to the acoustic music scene. WBR in Boston says it's equal parts Baroque, bluegrass, and Latin jazz, virtuosic all the same. So good to cheese for you all being here today. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Absolutely. So let's introduce the trio and the instruments that we were just hearing. So maybe let's start over here.
Well, hello. My name is Joe K. Walsh, and I play the mandolin.
Awesome. Yep. Okay.
And my name is Mike Block. Conveniently enough, I am in the Mike Block Trio, and I play cello.
Yes, absolutely. And you play it a unique way, which we're going to get to. Yeah, and absolutely.
And my name is Noah Fishman. I was just playing the bass.
Awesome. Yeah, you brought this giant bass in today. It looks so great. I'll make sure I post a picture of this on the web post for this episode today because it was really cool to see all of these instruments. And you were playing on the lovely Myrtle microphone from Ear Trumpet Labs, which is perfect for an acoustic group like y'all.
Love Ear Trumpet.
That's yeah, great. They are so good. And it just makes the sound fill the space really well. So where are you all from?
We're an East Coast band, so I live in Boston, and Noah and Joe both come from the Portland, Maine area.
Oh, I see. Okay. So does it happen that when you all have gigs, that's when you get together and practice, or are you practicing over Zoom, or what are you doing?
Well, we're only a couple hours drive from each other.
So, okay.
So we get to see each other fairly often out there on the East Coast.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. And this is not your first time to Alaska. I know Joe was telling me earlier that he's been here before, but this week you've been sort of all over. Where have you been traveling to while you've been here in Alaska this time around?
Yeah, Juneau is the last stop for us. So we've been in Alaska for about 10 days, maybe. We started in Petersburg, then Anchorage, then Sitka. Now, Juneau, we've had a few days in each place, and it's been really special. Noah and I have never been to Alaska before this tour.
Oh, okay.
But Joe is practically a citizen. He has a long history here. So he's been showing us around and telling us what not to do.
Joe, you look a little bit like you might do some fishing.
I commercial fished on Kodiak for a summer.
Well, see, there you go.
You're very good.
You fit in perfectly into the look of Alaska, which is absolutely great. But so how are you guys, how are you and Noah finding Alaska so far? And what do you think, Noah?
It's incredible. Yeah, I'm already planning my next visit.
Yeah, it's similar to the East Coast, but totally different, right? Like, I mean, we have less people, which is awesome. Mm. And but the outdoors, I mean, I know up north where you guys are, up in Maine, there's a lot of, you get to the mountains and you get to see some stuff like what we've got here, right? A little bit.
Yeah, there's a specific aspect actually about being in Juneau that I'm really loving. On the coast of Maine, we have a lot of islands and inlets and boulders that were carved out by glacial movement. But it's sort of like, oh, when the glaciers were here, this is what happened. And here you get off the plane and there's the glacier doing its thing.
Oh,
so
wow.
It's a little bit like stepping back in time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And one of my favorite things about living here, it's a little bit less like this on the East Coast, but the fact that you have to fly or take a boat here, you can't just drive here, right? So it prohibits that particular kind of tourist. We still get a lot of tourists and we love our tourists, but it's just in terms of it makes this community sort of small and impactful and we rely on each other and we really count on things like Juno Jazz and Classics to be able to tap us into the world of music outside of Juno, which is so great that they're able to do that twice a year now in terms of the Spring Festival and the Fall Festival. So let's talk a little bit about your music. I described a little bit in the intro, but how do you all characterize the music?
Well, we have the blessing of being sort of led by the cello for a lot of our melodies. And cello is not really a traditional instrument outside of Western classical music. So instantly, nobody really knows what to expect from us, which is helpful. But with mandolin and bass and, you know, cello and kind of the role of a fiddle, I feel like we're kind of bluegrass adjacent, coming from the string band world. But I love playing with musicians from different cultures, different backgrounds. And so we bring a lot of those global influences into our compositions and even our arrangement choices. But we also play songs that feel contemporary. And so, you know, it's kind of we're touching on a little bit of this, a little bit of that through our music.
Is this set of instruments together, is that sort of a unique sound, or is that something that we might have heard these together? Because the mandolin has such a specific sound to it, right? Mm-hmm. I know we've heard bass and cello before together in other like quartets or something like that, but bringing the mandolin in, does that like do something to make the sound unique in a way?
There's not very many ensembles I can think of that had a mandolin and a cello. The Rising Fawn String Ensemble with Norman and Nancy Blake would be one, but I struggle to find a second one. And certainly the aesthetic and repertoire choices Mike is leading kind of puts it into another, you know, direction from everybody else. Interesting.
So how do you then decide, since that is the sort of a unique combination, how are you deciding what tunes to do? And then what are you doing to the tunes because you know you have these particular instruments?
Well, it's a combination of the instruments, but also the people involved. And so kind of playing to musicians' strengths and knowing what they're going to thrive in is a big part of the repertoire choices as well.
I see.
And also the composition. I think what was really great is, you know, after our first tour, you know, even though the pandemic stopped a lot of things, it gave me a chance to take a step back and write a whole bunch of new music specifically for the trio, even after we had done a number of tours. And so that was helpful to write for the band specifically. You know, the instruments work really nice together because we all have our different sound worlds. So none of us are ever competing with each other, right? So we all have our space. And so after kind of finding that texture that feels great, it's really about making sure that the people involved get the outlets that are going to feel good for them.
I love that sort of during the pandemic, sort of out of the darkness comes a lot of light because you're able to sort of do more and think about what the future of the band might be, right?
Exactly.
In terms of that time off that you had to take. How long have you all been a trio together?
I think the first tour of the project was 2018. So it's been a while.
And this is more of a silly question, but how did you come up with the name?
Well, I always loved the name trio. Growing up. And so I really just really wanted to live up to that name at a certain point. And so eventually I found two friends.
Yeah.
And that's all it took.
And you're like, guys, do you mind if I name this the Mike the Mike Block Trio? And they're like, sure. What's the pay, right?
You must be a musician. You know how this works.
I'm not a musician, but I was an artist for many years. All right. So what is this standing up strap thing all about that Rachel kept telling me about, and I saw you doing it today?
She warned you. Okay, well, for listeners at home, you know, the cello, as you may know from Zul Bailey and other, you know, cello players through the years, it's usually played sitting down.
Mm-hmm.
And if
put
I can...
Put their legs out in a V splayed, and they put that in
exactly.
there. Yeah, splayed.
So if I can be so bold, I like to refer to that as the 20th century style of cello playing. And here, what I've done is I've designed a strap that allows me to stand up when I play. And so I can move. And if I could dance, I would while playing. But really, you know, in non-classical environments, it's really helpful for me to be mobile and kind of up with the other musicians and interacting more physically. So for people that come to the concert tomorrow night with the full trio, they will not see any chairs on stage.
Interesting.
And they won't see any stands on stage. You know, a lot of what we do is by ear. And even though we've crafted arrangements, there's always breathing room within it. So every time we play a piece, it's different. And so we kind of thrive on that spontaneity. And we kind of hope that something will happen on the stage that's never happened before.
Oh, that's kind of cool. So it's like the first time, right? So it's like the illusion of the first time, the music being played for the first time, because if you're able to sort of be in sync with each other, you never know what might happen. Yeah.
And I find that if we mess up enough, then we can guarantee that something new will happen on stage that has never happened.
I love that.
Yeah.
All right. No, I have to ask you, because I just always find this interesting, right? How did you decide to play that giant instrument?
Well, the first thing I always say is it's hollow. So it's big, but it's not that heavy.
Okay.
It just takes up a lot of room. But I did start as a pianist when I was a little kid. It's smaller than a piano. And then I played the drums, and it's easier to carry around than the drums. So all things relative. But there's something really special about the bass. With when you're playing the lowest note at any given moment, it gets you involved in a really cool way where you're underpinning sort of the whole sound, but also in the background in a way. It's just a really interesting role that I enjoy a lot.
I love it. I love it when I see a group and you can feel the bass in your body. That's when you can really sort of tell that there, because the stuff like the mandolin is going to hit my ear. Mm. The bass is going to hit my body. Right. Yes. And then I'm able to absorb all the sound as it comes through, which is kind of cool. But is it hard to check that at the airport? Well, you get this question a lot. I know it's a dumb question, but
this bass that I brought to the studio is a folding bass. Actually, I just set it up in the other room. In about 10 minutes, it goes from being, a piece of plywood in a box to a 4-string bass.
Wow. That's cool.
Yeah. And it weighs 49.9 pounds. So you can check it really easily. It's not even oversized or overweight.
I love it. Right at the weight limit. That's so cool. I love that.
Yeah.
Joe, how did you get involved in the mandolin, or what other instruments do you dabble in?
I actually started on the piano as well, and the trombone. And then somebody played me a David Grisman record, and I kind of lost my mind and went out and bought a record, and I've been practicing a lot since then, which was about 25 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Just loved the way it sounded and felt it was fresh but familiar, kind of that beautiful combination of something I understood and also didn't understand at the same time.
That's cool. And you all have sort of a new album that's coming out?
We have our recent album is called What Now?
What Now?
And it features a lot of original music and some of these global influences that we've been talking about.
Oh, that's so cool. And I know we can also, I'm going to put a link to it, to your website on our show notes for this page today. And that's also where you're there. I think there's a link to, if people are interested or playing the cello and want to get into standing up and rocking around the stage with a stand up, it's available as an item, right?
That's true. If you or someone you love is a cello player, Christmas is right around the corner, and you can send them to cellostrap.com. And then they can get a cello strap and learn more about it than they ever wanted to.
And Mike was the first standing cellist to perform at Carnegie Hall. That is amazing.
Well, somebody had to be.
Yeah, I know. That's so great. Would you all mind playing us another song as we finish up the show today?
We'd love to, yeah.
Okay, and I'm going to give out the information as you all get set up. So the Mike Block Trio is playing tomorrow night at Elizabeth Baratchevich Hall at 7 o'clock tomorrow, and tickets are available at jazzandclassics.org. Also, tonight is the Putting on the Ritz. It also starts at 7 o'clock, and that you're going to see Chelsea Green and the Green Project. And Zool Bailey will also be playing, and Mike will be making a special appearance, because who can say no to Zool, right? Not you. And you can find out more about Mike and the trio at mikeblockmusic.com. And again, for tickets for the festival, you can go to jazzandclassics.org. Once again, everybody, the Mike Block Trio.
Songs from long ago, trudging through the snow. As I go, I walk alone. Breathing hard and slow, making her way through the morning cold. Dreaming futures I'll never know. Despite it all, I am feeling good. One fine day, I'll have it made. One fine day to anticipate. Oh, one fine day. Station, but I am still waiting for my maiden. She never ever got off the train, but I will never ever stop waiting. One fine day I'll have it made. One fine day to anticipate. So sad, I'm planning to be oh so happy. One fine day I'll piece it all together. All the hours will feel better.
The Mike Block Trio, everybody. Thanks so much for y'all being here. That will do it for today's Juno Afternoon. Have a great weekend. Find the show online at kto.org/JunoAfternoon, where you can listen to episodes, subscribe to the podcast, or find out how to be a guest on the show. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Have a great weekend, everybody.